facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A tremendous Thursday to you, and it is a tremendous Thursday. I have had this date circled on my calendar for a long, long time. It's Thursday, the 25th of April, 2024. So happy that you're with me on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. It's draft day. It's draft day. And I am not talking about the movie starring Kevin Costner, although that's pretty good too. Not a bad flick. It's totally up my alley. But I'm talking about the NFL draft, but I'm really going to be talking about the church draft. We'll talk about that in just a second. Yeah, you've been drafted by the Catholic Church, number one pick. How about that? Go get yourself an agent. We're also going to be talking about the fact that today is the feast day of my favorite of the four evangelists, the four gospel authors, Mark. Love the gospel of Mark. Mark really changed my life, and I'm so excited about that gospel, about that feast day. We'll get into that later on. Let me hand out the phone number right now, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Our listener line sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters. Life insurance, as always, thank you so much, guys, for your support. 888-914-9149. Call in for free and talk to me. They make it possible. You can also email the program, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And you can follow me on the X app, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. Really, by the way, if you go on Twitter, if you go on the X app or any other social media, if you follow the Relevant Radio accounts, producer Miranda Sinisteros did a really nice logo for our draft day show. Really cool. I like how she did that. You can check that out if you follow our accounts on X, Facebook, Twitter, X. I was going to say TikTok, but I think just today TikTok got banned. I'm late to the party on this one. I've had my nose to the grindstone, but I saw a tweet or a post, as it's called now on X, referencing that. Maybe we'll talk about that tomorrow. But having said that, I cannot wait for the NFL draft. I cannot wait for Roger Goodell, commissioner of the NFL, to stride across the stage. And we're going to hear that famous NFL chime signifying the first pick is in. Can I hear it, Jim? Man, I love that chime. I love that chime. I want that on my phone. That's got to be my ringtone. Maybe it should be our ringtone for this episode, producer Jim. Whenever somebody calls in, we've got to pull the chime. We absolutely have to pull the chime.
It's the perfect day for it.
It's the perfect day for it. And I have the perfect article, by the way, to share with the people, Jim. And this was sent to me by Patrick Haleig. And Patrick just nailed it here because Patrick, he understands, this is what I like to do. And everybody knows I like to do this. I kind of live in, if you think of a Venn diagram, I love to live in that diagram where these two circles overlap, faith and culture. That's where the magic happens. If you can get that kind of shaded in part where those two circles in the Venn diagram overlap, I love that stuff. So anything that's kind of along those lines, I just eat it up. So Patrick Haleig, who's working the phones tonight, 888-914-9149, he sent me a really, really cool article. I was like, oh, I have to use this. I have to use this. It's called The Church Draft, God's Divine Roster for an Apostolic Age. And it was written by Scott Elmer, who's the Chief Mission Officer of the Archdiocese of Denver. And Scott, man, this is, if you're listening, incredible article. I like the way you think. I like the way you think. So I'm just, this is so cool. I have to share this. So he basically says that he's an NFL draft junkie, just like me. I love watching the draft. Some people don't like the draft. They'd rather just watch the games. But I really love seeing all the intrigue. The first few picks are almost paint by numbers most of the time, because most teams know who they're going to go. Well, every team knows who they're going to try for, obviously. And if you're later on in the docket, if you're picking later on, your choice might depend on what other teams do ahead of you. There's always trades. There's always intrigue. There's always excitement, always drama. The consensus presumptive number one pick, of course, is going to go to the Chicago Bears. And in all likelihood, it's going to be quarterback Caleb Williams from USC, who won the Heisman Trophy 2 years ago. He could be another Mahomes. I'm not so sure. But the guy who wrote this piece is a big Chicago Bears fan, lifelong Bears fan, Scott Elmer. And he says, look, the church is a lot like a football game. The church is a lot like a football game. And in the church, just like on NFL teams, there's an offense, there's a defense. Special teams will have to leave for another time. But there are different phases of the game. And there are specific positions that need to be played. And every single player has to fit into the scheme that every team is running, either on offense or on defense. You might remember the famous 46 defense of the greatest NFL team of all time, the 1985 Chicago Bears. Buddy Ryan, of course, ran that defense, ran roughshod over the NFL. Their defensive systems, like the 46 defense, their offensive systems, like the West Coast offense, that's so popular, of course, in the NFL. And so you've got to play your position within the system. So Scott Elmer, let's get our draft board together for the church. And we need to construct a roster here. So what are, if you were to compare football to the Catholic Church, what are the equivalent positions? Well, let's go to the offense. Offense always excites people, sells tickets for sure. And he said this, quote, as a caveat to this section, I have not found the church to be a prolific offensive team in recent history. We resemble my beloved Chicago Bears far more than the Kansas City Chiefs. I could take this much further, but I'll spare you. End of quote. Yeah, that's a great analogy. And the Bears are going to draft maybe the best quarterback. We'll see. He hasn't even played a down in the NFL yet that maybe they've ever had. Going back to Sid Luckman. Although I do disagree with that a little bit, because my favorite player of all time is the punky QB, Jim McMahon, number 9 on that 85 Bears team. Love Jim McMahon, if you're listening, Jim. Great quarterback. But having said that, yeah, it's true. The Bears offense traditionally has been more abundant when it comes to the passing game. Might change now. Things might change. But let's look at who the quarterbacks are in the Catholic Church. Who do you think they are? According to Scott Elmer, he says that the quarterbacks are really the pastors of the church, pastors of the local parishes, but also, of course, the bishops of the church. They're the leaders. They're the leaders of the offense. The church has to be on offense. We can't be playing defense in the culture all the time. We've got to take aim here, and we've got to be aggressive. So Scott Elmer says people might push back and say, well, no. The pastors of the church, priests, bishops, they're not really the quarterbacks. They're more like the coaches. Well, he would say the Holy Spirit is really the coach here, and he's the one who's calling the plays, but the pastors need to tune into what the coach is saying. You know how they have their headsets on, of course, and they're all communicating? The pastor needs to listen to the play call from the Holy Spirit and communicate it to the offense. And of course, the quarterback slash pastor, he says, also has to make sure everybody's in the correct position, everybody's in the correct alignment, got to read the defense, run the play as it is designed, divinely designed when it comes to the church. Now, of course, one would have to say that being an NFL quarterback, it's probably the most consequential position on a team sport that there is. They're responsible for so much. And maybe they get too much blame with a loss. Maybe they get too much credit with a win because it is a team game, but they have a lot of responsibilities. Their primary responsibility is to distribute the football to other players. And pastors have to do this as well. Bishops, priests have to do this as well. They have to give the football. Let's say the football is the message, the gospel, to the other players in the offense. And this is exactly, by the way, what St. Paul says in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 13. It's always been a powerful verse that I've really loved. And St. Paul says that it's all about equipping the saints for the work of the ministry. In Ephesians chapter 4, verses 11 through 13, it says, and he, that's God, of course, gave the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the shepherds, and teachers. Why? To equip the saints for the work of the ministry, for building up the body of Christ until we all attain to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to mature manhood, to the measure of the fullness of the stature of Christ. So this is what it's all about. And the pastors, of course, aren't out in the world. That's our job. That's you. That's me. You can't take Father Joe to the cubicle with you. Well, I mean,
Maybe you could. You could take Father Rocky with you with the Relevant Radio app. You can just blast it in your cubicle. But it's, you can't, they're, that's not their position. That's not their role. Their role is to deliver the football to you, and then you can take it and run with it to all of these places. So this is really important. And a quarterback, as Scott Elmer notes, is always better with better players around him. And a great quarterback can elevate the play of the rest of the offense. And we see this, of course, even at the universal level. Great shepherds, great popes like Pope John Paul II just elevate everybody in the church. It's so important. We see this with great quarterbacks in the NFL as well. The GOAT, Tom Brady, how great was he? But he was even greater when he had Randy Moss with him in that undefeated regular season. They did, the one game they lost, of course, was the Super Bowl against the Giants following the 07 season. Almost had the perfect season. Brady with Moss, unbelievable. He broke the touchdown record that was held by Dan Marino for so many years, threw 50 touchdowns. Moss broke the record for receiving touchdowns. I mean, the two of them are just absolutely magical together. So better players will always elevate other better players and great players. So, if the quarterback is the pastor at the local level, at the national level, at the universal level, the pastors of the church, who are the running backs? Who are the running backs? Well, Scott Elmer says that the running backs, that's really the sacramental life of the church. He says, quote, "Everyone knows that the run game is the heart of an offense. Strong rushing attacks help teams make deep runs in the playoffs. They make the rest of the offense function for a few key reasons. First, running the football takes a physical toll on defenses. It wears them down, puts constant pressure on them." It's the ground and pound approach, right? Think about Jerome Bettis, the bus with the Pittsburgh Steelers. What a force he was. Think about Derrick Henry, King Henry. Oh my goodness, he was going to try to tackle this guy. He throws people around like rag dolls, as Josh Norman found out when he was with the Bills. But having said that, the running game is absolutely crucial, not just because it puts pressure on the defense in its own way, but it keeps the defense from assuming it's going to be a pass play every time. And so you can't just sell out, against the pass. You've got to put some people in the box against the run. And this is what it's all about. So the sacraments, he says, are the running game of the Catholic Church. The pastors need to feed the running game. Any running back worth his salt needs a lot of carries. He's got to have the ball in his hands. He's got to get into the game. So the pastors need to feed the rock to the running backs. Pastors need to feed the sacramental life of the church. And there are liturgical wars out there. What's the best way to do this? People can argue about that. But at the end of the day, the sacraments are real. They are there. Consistency is really, really important. The consistent running game, consistent not only dispensation of the sacraments, but reception of the sacraments from you and me. What about the offensive line? Here's a quiz, Jim. Who do you think the offensive line is in the church? It's a tough question. It's a tough question.
That is a tough question. Offensive line in the Catholic Church. Nothing comes to my mind.
So he says, it's a tough one. He says it's the academy. The academy. Now, why is that, of course? Well, the offensive line does really a couple of jobs. They protect the quarterback, who in this case would be the pastors of the church. They protect the QB, and they also open up holes in the running game. So what does the academy do for the church? Catholic scholars, Catholic professors, seminary professors in particular, impact the church in a huge, huge way. So study is obviously a really, really important part of our life. And it's not just for the pastors. It's not just for those who teach for a living in the church, and that's their vocation. But it's true for all of us. It's absolutely true for all of us. I always liked the motto of the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology. It was founded by Dr. Scott Hahn, Mike Aquilina, of course, who's a friend of the program, heavily involved as the president. So the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology, that is a great, great motto. Biblical fluency for clergy and teachers and biblical literacy for the laity. I really, really like that. I really like that. Because if you're going to teach others, you have to know more than what you teach. There's no question about it. So our teachers, our pastors, our leaders, they need to study. They need to know very, very well what the truth is and pass it on. But we need to know it too. We need to be literate, not just with the scriptures, but also with the catechism, with our faith in general. And Relevant Radio is in so many ways a great catechism over the air, isn't it? And it's important to teach well because there's always false teachings out there. Satan's a liar, and he always wants to use sophistry, false wisdom, to counteract the true teaching of the church. He's done this from the beginning. He did this with Eve in the garden. Did God really say that? Did he really say that? That's maybe there's another way to look at this. Nothing but sophistry. And then, of course, Jesus. He's even trying to tempt Jesus. He's misquoting scripture to the word of God made flesh. Imagine that, the divine word. If he'll try that with you, he'll definitely try that. If he'll try that with Jesus, he'll definitely try that with you and me. That's what I meant to say. But so the offensive line is the academy. These are our theologians. They need to be rooted in the basics. And this is what the offensive linemen really do as well. They're rooted in fundamentals, their technique. You'll hear a lot during, if you watch the draft night, about, oh, this guy plays a great three technique as an offensive lineman. Well, you got to be rooted in proper technique. And that helps the ground game, the sacraments, to really take off. And if the academy is not consistent, not fundamentally sound, not overpowering the defense, well, our pastors are going to be running for their lives because they're dependent. I mean, they're taught by others, and then they have to go teach thousands more in parishes through their homilies, through their sermons, through so many other means. So it's really, really important that those who form the people who form others are really well formed themselves, if that makes any sense. All right. One more quick one, then we got to take a break. How is the Catholic Church like an NFL football team? Well, there's another important offensive position, often unsung, often overlooked, and that's the fullback. That's the fullback. Maybe the best fullback in the NFL right now, you could argue with me, is Kyle Juszczyk from the San Francisco 49ers. He does everything from catching passes to blocking to receiving, even being a holder on field goal attempts. And the fullback is really important for an offense because fullbacks are versatile. They do the dirty work, and that's one thing that Scott Elmer pointed out in his piece on this. He says, quote, many times they're undervalued, underpaid in the real world, but when your offense is without one, you feel the loss. So who are the fullbacks in the Catholic Church? He says they're the religious orders. It's kind of interesting. Unsung heroes often are men and women religious. They've left the world to pray for the world. And they do the dirty work. They do the prayer. They do the sacrifice. We all have to kind of do that, but this is their primary vocation. And they'll block for us, if you will, so we can bring the gospel through the offensive line. We can try to score. Religious orders have different charisms, and they have a lot of different functions, just like a guy like Kyle Juszczyk is so versatile and valuable. Sometimes they bring clarity. Sometimes they help battle the culture. And sometimes they can take matters into their own hands. Sometimes when you're on the goal line, you hand the ball off to a fullback because he's so much closer to the line of scrimmage, he can punch it in. And sometimes religious orders have had to do that as well. And he uses the example of rebuilding Western civilization. No doubt that's a reference to the monks, the monasteries. When the Roman Empire crumbled, the monasteries kept culture alive. Absolutely. Well, where do you think Relevant Radio would fit in, by the way, on this football team of the church, if you will? Well, we're going to find out right after this break. Can I hear the chime one more time, Jim? Where's the chime button? We got to have it. With the number one pick in the 2024 draft, the Catholic Church selects you. Find out where you fit in. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Be right back, 888-914-9149.
The Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Hey, welcome back to the program. 888-914-9149 is the number to call to talk to me for free. appreciate you listening. I'm so excited about today. It's the Feast of St. Mark the Evangelist. We're going to talk about the incredible contribution he made to the world. Just a unique contribution, writing the first gospel. You may say, hang on here, isn't Matthew the first gospel? No, it's Mark. I'll explain that later. But it's also draft day. The NFL draft goes tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern. I'm going to be camped out in front of the couch. I love the draft. I love watching these young players, their dreams come true, their families, their coaches, everyone who supported them throughout the years, as they walk across the stage and give Commissioner Roger Goodell a big bear hug. They're happy with him, even though the crowd never is. They always boo the commish. It's part of the deal. But whenever the pick is in, you hear that draft chime. We've got it for you right now. I love this sound. Yes. So when you call in, 888-914-9149, I will play the chime for you. Going through this fun article that was published in DenverCatholic.org by Scott Elmer. He's the chief mission officer of the Archdiocese of Denver. Really, really, really cool article. Really that sweet spot between faith and culture. He has this playful article called The Church Draft, God's Divine Roster for an Apostolic Age. And he goes through all the positions on a football team, kind of compares them to the different roles, vocations within the Catholic Church that we really need to win at the game of life. And if you missed the first part of the show, we will have the podcast up for you just a little while after the show. You'll probably have even time to listen to it before the draft starts, I hope. But we talked about how really the quarterbacks of the Catholic Church are the pastors of the church, bishops, priests. Running backs, they're the sacramental life of the church. Offensive line is the academy, so crucial. Fullbacks represent religious orders. What about organizations, apostolates like Relevant Radio? Where do we fit into this whole game? Well, as Scott Elmer says, these are the flashy positions. Wide receivers. These are the apostolates of the church. And I'm just going to quote him here. Quote, widely considered prima donnas, wide receivers help make football fun and exciting by regularly bringing big play potential. Similarly, apostolates, while having a flair for the dramatic, which is reflected in their marketing collateral, certainly help the church attack the defense and make plays downfield. Well, we're an apostle. Does that mean we're a bunch of divas? I hope not, Jim, but I'll tell you, we're more like I know you hate the Patriots, but we just kind of have the attitude more like the Patriots. Bill Belichick just said to all the players, just do your job. It's about the team. But of course, throughout the years, wide receivers have been known. Yeah, there have been some prima donnas. Stephon Diggs, anyone? was just run out of Buffalo for essentially being that. This might be a case of addition by subtraction. He's a great player. Remember T.O., Terrell Owens, and all the drama surrounding him all the time. But yeah, the wide receiver position is flashy. Think about C.D. Lamb from the Cowboys. Just so much talent. And wide receivers in the NFL, they're kind of evaluated for doing a few things well. Can they run the entire route tree? All the different receiving routes that they have to know and run, are they good at all of them? You'll hear that mentioned a lot when they break down players that are drafted tonight in the NFL draft. Are they athletic? Can they catch? How are their hands? That's pretty crucial if you're going to be a receiver. And Scott Elmer says, when it comes to the apostolates of the church, they need similar skills. They need route running skills. They need to know their role. They need to be where the quarterback, the pastors of the church, expect them to be. What about athleticism? Well, that's the dynamic nature of these apostolates. Some are going to be more simpler in their approach. They're doing certain things really, really well. Others have more star power, more reach, more potential for impact. And so for apostolates, he says, the question is simple. Can they do what they claim they can do when the ball is thrown their way? Or is it all for show? Do we just talk a good game, or do we actually play a good game? And I really like this this idea of being where the quarterback expects them to be, being where the pastors of the church expect us to be. That's very important to us here at Relevant Radio. Unity with the bishops. It's one of our guiding principles. We really want to be in lockstep with the bishops in this country, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. And so really, really important. And we can have a huge impact on people's lives. And we hear them all the time, miracle moments on Relevant Radio, people whose lives have been touched, just tuning in on the dial, happenstance, maybe stuck in a traffic jam, or maybe somebody has recommended the Relevant Radio mobile app to people. And they've listened to one of our shows and they've been touched. And it's not about Relevant Radio. It's not about Relevant Radio. It's about Jesus Christ. It's about bringing Christ to the world through the media. That's why we do what we do. And so, hey, we can make those big plays downfield. There's no question about it. You're listening to Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Well, if the Catholic Church was like a football team, who would the tight ends be? And they're kind of receivers, kind of not. They do catch passes as well, but they're also responsible for blocking a lot of things. And recently in the NFL, having the double tight end set has been a big offensive weapon. The Patriots really popularized that in recent years with Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez, who tragically, we all know what happened with Hernandez. I think CTE obviously played a role. But wow, what an unbelievably sad an evil story, really, what happened to him. Say no more about that. But this is and it's a copycat league. When it works well for one team, you better believe other coaches are going to pick it up. So even my Buffalo Bills use the double tight end effect, set to full effect. Dalton Kincaid, who was a great rookie last year, Dawson Knox, the two DKs, awesome stuff. And tight ends in the church are really the educational institutions, according to Scott Elmer. So when you have tight ends they can be primarily blockers, but as I said, in recent decades, they're used more and more in the passing game. And the different type of tight end that a team has, that's a signal as to what their identity really is. If you have a blocking tight end, you're a running team. And so this is why he says it's like the educational institutions in the church. Because these are the formation programs in the church. And so you could have formation programs, institutions that put out great teachers, great pastors, maybe some evangelists, some prophets, some apostles. I think of great educational institutions like Franciscan University, the Augustine Institute. They're just turning out just high quality people on these fronts. And they are going to influence the offense. And no matter how hard they work, though, they have a role to play. Tight ends are never going to become Terrell Owens. They're never going to become, well, sometimes they can, I guess, but you're not going to become a Jerry Rice. But they can do a lot of damage for the offense. We'll talk about the defense in just a second, but let's go to the phones right now. Can we have a chime? Let's get a call. Nathaniel is in Lewis, Colorado. Hi, Nathaniel. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Yeah, thanks, Cale. Yeah, I just wanted to say, like, Relevant Radio, for me, they're the Jerry Rice. The wide receivers.
Wow.
I mean, you guys are classy. Jerry Rice is classy. He did his job. He didn't showboat. He gets a touchdown, hands the ball to the official, and then he gets back to work. And that's kind of what Relevant Radio does. It's not about you guys. It's about the team moving that ball forward.
I love that comment, Nathaniel. That is incredible. Jerry Rice was the GOAT. He was absolutely the GOAT of receivers, the greatest of all time. So that is a heady comparison, and that is very humbling for us. But thank you so much for that word of encouragement, Nathaniel. Really appreciate you calling in.
Thanks.
That is awesome. Wow, what a nice thing to say. Relevant Radio is the Jerry Rice of media apostolates. That's a high bar. That's a high bar to live up to. But we'll try to make you proud, Nathaniel, and continue to try to be like Jerry, because he was awesome and he was so hardworking. He was so humble and he was so skilled. And that's what we try to do. Offer our skills for the glory of God. Absolutely. All right. Well, we've talked about the offense. What about the defense? 888-914-9149. How is the Catholic Church like a football team? Today's the day of the NFL draft. And we have been drafted. All of us have been drafted onto the dream team, onto a championship team, and that is the Catholic Church. So it's kind of like you're guaranteed to win the Super Bowl when you're in the church. And we have the true Super Bowl. It's not a silver trophy that's given out at the end of the season. It is the ciborium that is filled with the sacred host, the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ. How about that? How about that for an analogy? All right. So what about the defense? Well, The defensive line, we do have to play defense in the church as well as offense. We need to share the gospel, but we also have to defend our part of the field. We have to defend our faith. And the defensive line, according to Scott Elmer, is the family. The D-line is so crucial in any football scheme. There are defensive tackles. There are defensive ends. The tackles are kind of in the middle. They try to stop the running game. The defensive ends, they can rack up a lot of sacks. Sometimes they go on to host daytime talk shows, Mr. Strahan. They can really bend and get around that end and sack the quarterback. That's what it's all about. And the defensive line of the church is the family. John Paul II, St. John Paul the Great, said, "As the family goes, so goes the nation, and so goes the whole world in which we live," end of quote. It's true that the family is the cell, the building block of society. All of us come from a family, and some of us come from families where we had incredibly positive experiences. Sometimes they weren't so positive, but that's why the family, it just underscores why the family is so important, and you can overcome that. The church can be your family, and you can receive that love maybe you never had from your human father. God can truly be a father to you. But it's so important that strong families are there, because the family is under attack. The enemy is no dummy. He's like a great mastermind coach who, and I know producer Jim probably would say, you know, that's like, it's kind of like Bill Belichick, you know, an evil genius. Oh, he's not, he's not evil, come on, but he is a genius. But the enemy is even more genius than Bill Belichick. Of course, he has a preternatural intelligence. He's a fallen angel. He's fallen, but he's still smarter than everybody in the world put together. He knows what game plan can attack the church the best, and the best way to attack the church is to destroy the family. How do you destroy the family? Start by destroying the heart of the family, and that's marriage. And how much confusion is there around that? Male, female. That's why theology of the body is so important. What a weapon from St. John Paul II. That's a great game plan, absolutely, to build the civilization of love. But the church's defense really needs to shore itself up, and the family is what it's all about. All right, what about the linebackers? According to Scott Elmer from the Archdiocese of Denver, wrote this really fun piece called, once again, "The Church Draft, God's Divine Roster for an Apostolic Age." Well, what about the linebackers? He says those are the parishes. Those are the parishes. Linebackers are crucial. Think about Mike Singletary, Dick Butkus, the Chicago Bears, the Monsters of the Midway. Great linebacker tradition. Brian Urlacher, just goes on and on. They're the heart of the defense, really, and the linebackers make most of the tackles. They call the defense. They set the plays. They're responsible for communicating what we're going to do, make sure everybody's in position lined up. And parishes are like that, too, according to Scott Elmer, because this is where the stability really comes in. Linebackers are very versatile. They can really do a lot of different things. Sometimes they can play more like a defensive end. Sometimes they can kind of hang back and be like a cornerback or a safety and really protect the back end. And sometimes the parish kind of has to do that as well. Sometimes it has to focus more on stability. Sometimes it puts out on a blitz, a surprise blitz, and puts pressure on the enemy through missionary activities and initiatives. Pope Francis said this, quote, "The parish is not an outdated institution. Precisely because it possesses great flexibility, it can assume quite different contours depending on the openness and missionary creativity of the pastor and the community," end of quote. All right, just a couple more positions here. Cornerbacks, not quarterbacks, but cornerbacks. And they, of course, are crucial in the NFL because every team has got a star wide receiver. And there are certain shutdown corners, like Darrell Revis, who, of course, used to play for the New York Jets. It was called Revis Island. Whenever he was on the field, nobody threw the ball his way. He's probably going to intercept it. It's going to be incomplete. He just covered receivers like a blanket. Don't even try it. Sauce Gardner now on the Jets is another great shutdown corner. Patrick Surtain II from the Denver Broncos, always crucial for a team's battle plan. They can read the quarterback's eyes on the other team, anticipate throws. And they're like think tanks, according to Scott Elmer. These are the think tanks of the church. And I was trying to think, producer Jim, can you name me some big Catholic think tanks? I was racking my brain trying to think of some that are out there. But you think about it for a little bit. You don't have to answer right now. Maybe Patrick Aylock can shoot me some. But think tanks, for example, there is, and he gives the illustration of think tanks that were predicting the evils of gender ideology throughout the early 2000s, back when nobody was thinking this was going to be the issue that it has become. They kind of called it, they were prophetic in that way. Sort of an international level, geopolitical think tanks predicted that, you know, at some point in the near future, Russia was probably going to try to invade Ukraine. A lot of people didn't listen, didn't think that was actually going to happen. Well, it did happen. So think tanks are really, really important as well to try to raise awareness of a threat, contain damage, just like a great cornerback can anticipate what the cornerback is going to anticipate what a great quarterback on the other side might do, where they're going to throw, what their offensive move is going to be, and try to intercept that. All right. What about the safeties? Oh, think about hard-hitting safeties like Steve Atwater from the Broncos. I mean, safeties are incredible. Ronnie Lott from the 49ers, just laying the wood to people. But the safeties are the last line of defense. If a running back gets past the defensive line, gets past the linebackers, the last line of defense is the safety. Needs to make a tackle. You got to make tackles. A deep ball. Safeties often, their number one job is never make sure that nobody ever gets behind you. And they can kind of scan the entire defense from where they sit in the defensive backfield. And they sort of see the whole field and they can, it's easy for them to spot where the play is going to go. So Scott Elmer says the safeties in the Catholic Church are the prophets, because they see how the plays are unfolding, the last line of defense. And he gives the example of Elijah, the prophet Elijah. Israel had become very corrupt at this time. Elijah calls the people back to faith. The prophets do this again and again and again in the Old Covenant time. Remember when the Pope long ago moved the papacy to Avignon, France? Yeah, this actually happened. St. Catherine of Siena, she was kind of like a safety. She saw what was happening, and she prophetically went to talk to the Pope and said, you got to bring the papacy back to Rome where it belongs. He was like, you know what? You're right. It didn't quite go down like that, but you know what I'm talking about. They're seeing, what's the difference between them and the think tanks? The think tanks can, the cornerbacks, they can kind of see things coming too. But the difference is, according to Scott Elmer, the prophets are getting their insight directly from the Holy Spirit. And that's why their knowledge on this stuff is even better. They can see what the opposing offense, the bad guys, are really up to, what they're really going to do. And think about Padre Pio. And we talked about Padre Pio yesterday on the show. He was kind of a prophet of our age in the 20th century, kind of called people back. He looked like a guy who had stepped out of medieval times. What's going on? The stigmata, all these crazy miracles. But people had forgotten the supernatural, and people had forgotten the passion of the Christ. And he reminded us of that. So, very important. Every team lays out their draft needs. We're going to see this in the NFL draft tonight. But who does the church draft? Well, Scott Elmer says there's a few different rules you got to follow. Just three of them. They're pretty simple. Number one, quarterback is the most important position. In the NFL, if you've got a great quarterback and a great coach, you're set. Think about the Kansas City Chiefs. They've got coach Andy Reid, and they've got a quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, the magician. He's unbelievable. They've won three Super Bowls, and they'll probably win many more. Who knows what'll happen? But this is why that position is so crucial. If you're a general manager, if you don't have a good coach and you don't have a good quarterback, you will be fired eventually. That's why Ryan Poles, like, he's staking his whole profession as general manager of the Chicago Bears with his number one pick tonight. He's traded away his old quarterback, Justin Fields. I'm going all in on Caleb Williams here. And if he's not my guy, we're probably all going to get fired anyway. So let's roll the dice and make our bet here. Quarterback is important too in the church. Leadership is so amazing. And so we need leaders to get us to where we're going. And that's why the bishops, the pastors of the church are crucial, our parish priests as well. And then rule number two for drafting, you got to take care of the premium positions. Cornerback, pass rushers, left tackles, that's another crucial position. Key pieces. He talked about the pass rushers being families in the church, and maybe families are, you can never have enough great families in the church, and you can never have enough great offensive linemen because they get hurt sometimes. And a team can never have enough pass rushers. You can never have enough faithful families. And the third rule, choose the best player available. Sometimes no matter what your team needs, you might not need a wide receiver, but if the best guy available that's still on the draft board is a wide receiver, sometimes you got to go with the best player available. So we need good players on the Catholic team, and you have been drafted. You have been chosen. Are you training for the game of life? Are you growing in your faith? Are you receiving formation? Are you receiving the sacraments? Are you practicing your faith just like players have to practice to play well? And hey, let's get that great victory for Jesus Christ. And that's what it's all about. I mean, at Notre Dame University, I know we're kind of mixing metaphors here, the college game, there's that famous painting on the Notre Dame Library of quote-unquote touchdown Jesus. It's not real. You can see it from the football field. It's in the end zone. Kind of looks like he's in the end zone signaling touchdown, but he's not. He's got his arms raised in victory. It's the victory of the resurrection. That's what we share in, and that's why you can be on the greatest team of all time in the Catholic Church. We'll be right back on the Cale Clark Show. Let's hear that draft chime one more time, Jim. Let's go for it. That's right. You can call in. React to me. React to me. 888-914-9149. Be right back.
This is the Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
All right. Do you have the eye of the tiger? Are you ready for the walk to Mary? Well, you can do it. And speaking of Rocky, you can spend that weekend with Father Rocky at the Walk to Mary. It's the 11th annual Walk to Mary, Saturday, May the 4th. May the 4th be with you. And you can bring your intentions on this 21-mile walk through the beautiful countryside of Wisconsin all the way to the National Shrine of Our Lady of Champion. Want to be a champion in the faith, you got to go to Our Lady of Champion. It's the only approved Marian apparition in the United States. Many pilgrims have come back again and again and again for a powerful, prayerful experience. So the Walk to Mary includes different options. You can take the 14-mile option. You can take the 7-mile option. You can take the 1.7-mile option along this 21-mile route. Why doesn't it give the 21 as an option? That should be. I think you could do the whole thing too if you're up for it. At the end, it concludes with Mass. And if you can't walk with us this year, you can send in your prayers before noon Central Time on Thursday, May the 2nd. So as long as you get your prayer request in by that point, Father Rocky will carry your prayer request with him in his backpack. Go to relevantradio.com/champion to share your prayers, relevantradio.com/champion. Okay, well, it's the NFL draft. We had a playful segment or two before this talking about the Catholic Church. What if the Catholic Church was a football team? I thought that was really creative. Great article by Scott Elmer. Appreciate you, Scott. But now we're going to talk about another champion of the faith, another Hall of Famer, if you will, St. Mark the Evangelist. Today is the feast day of St. Mark. I love the Gospel of Mark. It's my favorite of the four Gospels. It used to not be. I mean, they're all great. I mean, come on. But everybody has their favorite. For me, it used to be John. I used to love John. I still love John. I love all the Gospels for different reasons. But I'd have to say probably my favorite is Mark, because when I started studying Mark, I used to think, it's shorter. It's not as beautifully worded, perhaps, as the prose that you might read in Luke or John. But man, Mark is a revolutionary document. The first Gospel written. And we may have to get into the reasons why in another episode, but it really changed the world. The first Gospel ever. And I was so mad when I was in grad school because I had this question on one of my exams and I thought I had the perfect answer. And the professor said, no, man, you're wrong. Because I said that the Gospel was a whole new genre of literature, which I kind of think it is. I still believe that it is, because a Gospel had never been seen before. But technically speaking, it's Greco-Roman biography. It is a historical biography in a Greco-Roman sense. And so I did get marked wrong on my exam, and my computer just died. So Patrick Alog, if you have a call, you may have to mediate that call for me, okay? So, okay, so thanks, Jim. I appreciate that. And all right, so we'll get through the technical difficulties in a minute. Time for a new Mac, I guess. Anyways, all right. Control-Alt-Delete. It's not happening. But St. Mark the Evangelist, let's talk about his life too, because he's a bit of a shadowy figure. We don't know too much about his own background, but I don't know why, but he's the patron saint of attorneys. I guess because he made such a great case for Jesus, I guess. Patron saint of captives, shoemakers, lions, notaries. Of course, Mark's gospel is kind of known as the lion, the four creatures, because his gospel starts off with, there's no infancy narrative of Jesus. It just starts off with John the baptizer in the wilderness, like a roaring lion calling people to repent. So he's the patron saint of lions. Detroit Lions fans, I guess your guys, Mark. Patron saint of notaries, glass workers, patron saint of Egypt. Of course, he has a lot to do with Alexandria, Egypt, and Venice. And producer Jim, you were telling me that you went to Venice. You went to St. Mark's Cathedral in Venice. I'd love to go to Venice. Never been there. But at any rate, like I said, his early life, we don't know a whole lot about him. But Mark's an action-oriented gospel. There's so many action words. Jesus' public ministry is really vividly narrated there. And there are more miracles in Mark's gospel than in all the other gospels, even though it's a lot shorter. And according to tradition, according to St. Irenaeus, Mark's gospel was written to Rome, and Mark was essentially Peter's scribe. As Peter preached, he would write down his preaching, his recollections. That's why there's so much stuff about Peter that's in Mark that we wouldn't have known unless Peter told Mark. For example, you know, everything that happened in the courtyard. Now, John was there too, probably, of course, with him. But Peter's denials, it's super embarrassing. Peter, nobody really would know about this unless Peter told on himself, this is what happened, this is what I did, I'm so ashamed. But it gave other people hope, of course. The detail about Jesus healing Peter's mother-in-law. Was he sad that happened? No, I'm just kidding. And the old preacher's joke is, yeah, that's why he betrayed Jesus later. He was still mad about that. But that's a terrible joke. I'm sorry. But great, great stuff in Mark's gospel. And he's Peter's scribe for sure. Now, he's also known in the Acts of the Apostles, he's mentioned as John Mark, as well as just being called simply Mark. The same guy, of course. John is his Jewish name, okay, Yehohanan or Johannes, and Mark is his Roman name, okay? His mother's name, Mary, we do know this. His mother's home, some people say that it was in Mary's house, Mary, the mother of Mark. That was the location, perhaps, of the Last Supper, the first Mass. That's also, by the way, when Peter got broken out of prison by the angel, he goes straight to the house of Mary. That's where he went. It says in Acts chapter 12, when he realized this, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, who was called Mark. There were many people gathered in prayer. So they're praying for him. They think he's going to die. He's knocking at the door. And there's this comedic theme when there's a servant girl named Rhoda who answers the door. And she's like, guys, Peter's here. And they're like, yeah, what are you talking about? Come on. This is a serious time. And then she actually shut the door on him. And he's out there in the cold and he has to keep knocking. Yeah, it really is me, guys. Anyways. Is Mark in the Gospel of Mark? Some people say that he is in Mark chapter 14. There's this very strange passage when Jesus is arrested. It says, now a young man followed him wearing nothing but a linen cloth about his body. They seized him, but he left the cloth behind and ran off naked. And he just ran right out of his clothes. You're not going to take me alive. Some people think that is Mark. It's a biographical touch. We don't really know. If anybody says they know, they're not really being honest about that. Nobody really knows. He was the cousin of St. Barnabas. It's also possible Barnabas was his uncle. But anyways, Mark had this huge fallout in real life with St. Paul. They had a major falling out. Mark actually was a missionary companion of Paul before he linked up with Peter. And from Antioch, it says this in the Acts of the Apostles, he went with Barnabas and Paul on this huge missionary journey. They went to Pisidian Antioch, which is in modern-day Turkey. And before they were finished their mission, Mark took off. Now, the circumstances, we don't really know too much about this, but Paul was absolutely livid. He was so mad at Mark. And he was like, you know, this guy just abandoned us. He bailed on the mission. And there was a time later on when Paul and Barnabas were going to go on another journey. And Barnabas, like, I want to take Mark. Mark's a great guy. He helps us out a lot. Paul said, absolutely not. Forget it. and they went their separate ways. And then Barnabas eventually took Mark with him to Cyprus. Paul took somebody else, and they went to another place. They made up later on because later, which is kind of nice. We can always recover friendships that have been damaged, and sometimes maybe seemingly irreparably so. Great reunion that they had. Later in his letters, he says how awesome Mark is. He's come back. He's helped him. He had great affection for him. His letter to Philemon, Colossians, and 2 Timothy as well. Anyways, we've run out of time again, but thank you so much for joining me on the Cale Clark Show. I will be back tomorrow. Very special guest as well tomorrow. John Scott will be on the program. Stay tuned for Trending with Tim Reid. Jim produced. Patrick took your phone calls. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.